Good morning, good morning, and welcome once again to our Sunrise Project weekly call, where it's always a safe space filled with love and our desire to heal ourselves and our families. And as always, I will say the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I am super delighted this morning to have my very dear friend, Dr. D. Sapp with us today. Dr. D, I call her lovingly, is a respected civic and corporate strategist, disability advocate, and mental wellness leader with more than 18 years of experience in executive leadership, policy advocacy, and nonprofit governance. Dr. D is the founder and CEO of Accessibility Bridge Corporation, which is a Maryland-based nonprofit advancing inclusion for people with disabilities, and the executive director of our very own Sunrise Project, where she champions mental health awareness and education for families and parents, like what we do this morning. Dr. D serves in multiple state and community leadership roles, including chair of the Maryland Development Disabilities Council, which is a two-term appointment made by Governors Larry Hogan and Governor Wes Moore, and a member of the State Early Childhood Advisory Council. She also leads DSAP Consulting, advising organizations on operational equity, plain language, and disability-informed strategy. She is a graduate of Penn State University with a Bachelor's of Science in Human Development and Family Studies, and she brings both professional expertise and what you'll hear about this morning, lived experience as a mother of three, including a son with autism and an intellectual disability. Her work reflects a deep commitment to advocacy, accessibility, and creating stronger systems for families and communities. As both a parent and a community builder, she understands the beauty and the challenges of caregiving, and she uses her voice to encourage, educate, and uplift other families. Her passion for advocacy and her commitment to helping others live well make her a meaningful and trusted voice for our conversation this morning. And I am so happy to have you with us this morning. Dr. D, I have to remember to call you that. I've known you as D forever since we met out in Phoenix when our children were little at a swim meet. But thank you for being here and to discuss our topic today, which is Autism Acceptance, a Mother's Perspective. And it is the month of April is Autism Awareness Month. So this is a timely and I'm looking and wonderful conversation that I'm looking forward to having. So welcome and good morning.
Good morning.
How are you today?
Doing good. This is a busy month. This is Autism Awareness and Acceptance Month. So I feel like I have something, at least one or two things going on every single day, Saturday and Sunday. But it's been a good month.
Yep, and you are busy, 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 always, always. So I want to start the conversation. I just mentioned that we met, oh gosh, when our children, I think, were about two, maybe 2 years old. No, not two, 10, 10 years old, out in Phoenix at a swim meet. And we ran to each other because we saw people that looked like ourselves. And we said, oh, we beelined. And we've been connected as sister friends ever since. But when did you know? I want to start and go back, all the way back, all the way back. You have three children. I know Lawrence is your son with autism. When did you first realize that he had autism? And when did you realize your parenting journey would be different and look different than you may have expected?
So Lawrence wasn't diagnosed with autism until high school. He was, I found out in the 11th grade. He was diagnosed with a developmental disorder when he was two. So I already knew that he had a disability, but the autism piece did not come until middle school.
Wow. And how did it come about? Like, how did the diagnosis happen?
So the diagnosis was actually, I'm not even going to say an accident. It was hidden in some paperwork. He, when you have an IEP, you get diagnosed every 3 years. There's like a review every 3 years with the school system. But I got his done through private pay, through a private psychologist, just to make sure that it was a full battery. and that we had everything. And so, in doing that, I was reading through his educational evaluation paperwork because I needed it for something else. And then in it, it described him as, an autistic male, dressed nicely today. And I was like, wait a minute, autistic male? Like, when did that happen? So that's how I found out that he was autistic, because I actually told people he wasn't. A lot of people would say, he's autistic, and I'm like, no, he has an intellectual disability, because that's the diagnosis he received in middle school. So that was shocking. And so he never received any services in the school system for autism, because at that stage he was getting ready to age out.
And when he was little, did you ever think maybe there was something like maybe there? Because I think back now, we've talked about like, sensory challenges, maybe. I think back to Chris, who was never diagnosed either. However, he was very sensitive, and only wanted to wear really soft clothes and sensitive to sounds and things like that. Did you see things like that when he was young?
No. And then autism seems like a new diagnosis. There wasn't, people didn't talk about that then. And he's a middle child at the time. He was diagnosed with a developmental disorder. He was just a second child. We only had two. I mean, so my daughter is 2 years, almost 2 years older than him. And his pediatrician, every year that we went, she just said, it's a boy. That's how boys are. Boys develop later than girls. She never once mentioned autism to us at all. Like, to this day, it was never in any paperwork, he hit the majority of his developmental milestones, except for speech, the talking. So she never diagnosed him with anything.
Which is so interesting. So what do people often misunderstand about autism?
People focus on the limitations of people with autism, and they focus on the perceived behaviors. But autism isn't something that people need to be afraid of, and it's not something that people need to fix. I want people to understand that it's just a different viewpoint, a different way of seeing or viewing the world. And there's value in looking at their perspective, because if you think about it, in terms of like engineers, people that we pay to do specific jobs, we even like in medicine or engineers, the people that get a lot of the credit and the accolades are the people that are the out of the box thinking, the people that come up with a new way to do an old thing. People with autism do the same things. They do, but they do it earlier on. And they do it in very non-conventional ways. And if you don't look at it that way, it seems like they're disruptive as opposed to being consistent contributors.
Interesting. It's like the I was thinking about Rain Man, and the a lot of times you have these brilliant minds, but that somehow come out in a different, a different, I'm saying air quotes, a different way. But in that movie from probably what, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, he was the autistic savant, that was just brilliant. And so I think that's what I'm hearing you say. There's often so much creativity or incredible opportunity to bring a different perspective to the table once
And it doesn't
people can
look like a
accept.
savant. It doesn't always
Okay,
come off
just
that
say
way.
more of that.
So one example, I don't know if anybody in the audience has seen The Hunger Games. And I think it was the first one. I can't remember which one it is, but I think it was the first one. And there was an older lady that they made it seem like she was just crazy, but she kept saying tick tock, tick tock, tick tock, the majority of the movie, and everybody else was trying to survive. Like, I think there was one person that was really keeping her with the group, but it made it seem like she was crazy, and they were trying to figure out the landscape of the thing that they were in. And Katniss, who is the main character in that movie, at some point she said, wait a minute, this maze is actually a clock. Because when they were going through the different things, like at certain times in certain spaces, things would happen, like it would be a storm, or the dogs would come out, or the whatever. But the entire time, this woman kept saying tick tock, tick tock. And it made it seem like she was just crazy. But then when Katniss listened to her, she was like, wait a minute, this whole landscape is a clock. If we move to another zone, then, this happens at 12 here, this happens here. So that, that's one way that these things actually show up, especially if they're being repetitive. Like they can't necessarily articulate it in a way. I mean, they can articulate it in a way that we understand. It just doesn't come out in a way that we would prefer that it be communicated, but it's still valuable nonetheless. I mean, and it was life-saving in that movie. So that's just an example that it doesn't always come out like the accountant, or Big Bang Theory. Like not everyone is like Asperger level autistic.
I guess, and there's stuff, and there's levels and stages, not stages, but different levels, and that's what the spectrum is all about, right? So, what are some of the challenges you faced, being a mother of an incredible young man who's now an autistic adult? What have been the challenges or some of the disappointments maybe you faced, but really the challenges, what are some of those things that you deal with on a daily basis?
Oh my goodness. The daily basis would be the phone calls. He's in a program. He's graduating from college in what, 2.5 weeks. So finally that's
Wow.
happening. But
Congratulations. Let's just pause on that. That's so
yeah.
amazing. And I know you personally, so I know the journey you've been on over the last 4 years with him and all of what you've been through. It's not for me to share any of that unless you choose to, but that's such a huge accomplishment. So congratulations to you and to him, but for all of what you have done as his advocate all of this time. So anyway, I just wanted to pause you on that because so
Oh,
please go ahead.
thank you, thank you, thank you. I appreciate that. but the challenges is being his cheerleader, even in spaces where people don't want, they don't see it as a time to celebrate. Just situations because he still struggles with social cues, understanding social interactions, being able to just if he knows that there's somebody that he's very intuitive. So if he knows that you don't like he can feel when people don't want him around, he can see it. And the thing is we can too, but we just have that, and I don't even know if it's an ability, but we can ignore it or we do ignore it. It's hard for him to do that, but also there's something to learn from that, of dealing with situations kind of head on in the moment. And so when I am advocating for him or speaking to his support professionals or even people in the public, it seems like I may be justifying bad behavior, but for me, I don't really consider it bad behavior. I consider it really advocating for himself. So when people say, it's inappropriate to tell people to leave you alone, and I'm thinking, is it really? Is it really inappropriate? What's inappropriate is when he's told you to leave him alone and you're still pressing him. Like after the third, leave me alone, he's gonna snap. And so then my question is like the first time he asked you to leave him alone, what did you do? And then they'll say, well, I tried to explain to him, whatever. Well, that's disrespectful. Like that's crossing a boundary. That's so I have to, and so using those terms, because he's 24. He'll be 25 this year. And I've raised all three of my children to be as articulate as possible and to be as intentional in your wording. Lawrence's vocabulary is a lot more limited. So it may be words like no, leave me alone, you're in my space. But for those of us who aren't autistic, we know what that means. But, people often get offended when he says those things because they have their agenda for whatever it is they need to be done. And I don't say agenda like negatively, like it could be his teacher.
I was about to ask you, have you had that happen with teachers or professors?
Oh, you know it has. You know, it's happened since he's been, in school. Like some days he may not be having a good day, and he'll say that. The teacher will call on him and he's like, "I'm not having a good day today." Or today's not a good day. But then the teacher's like, "Well, okay, sorry to hear that, but can you answer this question?" Whatever. And so I turn everything into a learning opportunity when like the program calls. I'm like, "So what does a teacher do when a student is saying I'm not having a good day today?" To me, that's a cue to ask somebody else a question. Like, it really isn't
Right.
that difficult. But then it turns
That's fine.
into a power struggle. And so I have had many, many, many conversations with his university because, when they say things, I'm like, this is a learning opportunity for you as well. It's not a blame game, but look at it in terms of him advocating for his space and these people crossing a
That's
boundary.
fine.
So that's the
That's right.
toughest part about it is, people are like, you're just justifying his bad behavior. Like he's not flipping over tables and breaking glasses. He's asking you to leave him alone. And,
That's right.
if that hurt your feelings or if it felt disrespectful, then, let's just consider the context. So every day is a different level of, but I have to be calm, because, he'll
Right.
come after me and say, well, it becomes attack mode, but I have to be strong for the both of us in those moments. I can't
Right.
respond like I want to, but as you know, I mean, I can be sharp tongue if I'm pushed,
Yes, you can. Very direct.
Yes, but it's the same thing. Like I'm asserting my boundaries, and then if somebody crosses it, then you have to meet people where they are.
Right. And I love that you said and leverage it, use it as a learning opportunity, for how other people can change their behavior, because often people don't know. They just don't know. Most people just don't know how to operate, how to act, how to change. Like we just did that campaign called Everyone with Autism Belongs with another side of our lives. And with that campaign, it was all about those little gestures that everybody can do to make somebody feel comfortable. And I learned a lot. You were the consultant on the project and the team lead, and thank goodness. But I learned a lot going through all of that, and listening to all the people with autism or people in that space at Easter Seals and all the interviews that you did. It was a great learning opportunity. So I love that you said that. Like you leverage every opportunity as a learning opportunity and you fight for your
And let's
son.
actually double click on that. So, I know not everybody in this space knows about that campaign that we worked on, but
Yes.
what made
It just launched this month. I'm so proud of it.
it
But go ahead,
did.
please.
But what made that special, and as you know, I got teary-eyed throughout the project, like even before the project, even the campaign even launched. Kelly and Melanie, so when I tried to explain things, because like as Kelly mentioned, a lot of people did not know like some of the things, like we literally talked about everything in this campaign about the different levels of autism, what happens within each level, like even the sensory items or the clothes or the terms, like we went through everything. But Melanie and Kelly, Melanie was our creative director on the project. They watched Love on the Spectrum. Like I think
Yes.
Kelly went through like two seasons in
All of
a
it.
night or whatever. But the fact that the team of people that I worked with really dug deep into learning about what it is and what it looks like before we even went out to LA to shoot.
To
And
shoot, right?
by then Melanie was able to articulate things without me being present. The
That's right.
conversations that we had, so it was just interesting the evolution of the jargon amongst the team, because then Melanie would say, well, this person is a level three autistic. Oh, we have to make sure to build in time. We need to like we even added an extra day on the shoot to give to give people time. I mean, luckily we didn't need it, but but that's the type of accommodations and modifications that
That's
happen
right.
in work outside of the people with disabilities. Like before we even,
That's important.
it's very important. And so the people from Easter Seals, they didn't really have to do a lot of hands-on. So like
That's
Kim
right.
and the people,
The client.
yeah, when the client, sorry, when the client came out and saw everything, they were like, you guys executed everything. The individuals with autism that were there, the families, it was just seamless. And so when I say that this isn't hard, it really isn't. Like we didn't
If
have
you take the
any,
time.
yes, the days that we were out there weren't meltdowns. There weren't like, it was just completely seamless. So my point is, when the work is built in to number one, what you do, but number two, who you are, the people on our team are very, very caring and willing to make those changes. And so you saw how easy it was. If we had not done that, if everybody was, kind of like, this is the way we do things. Oh my goodness, this is, you would have noticed the tension. They would have picked up on the tension. We wouldn't have been able to film anything. It would have been a week's worth of taping, not 3 days. So that was amazing. And then the last thing, there was a person on the production team, and Kelly knows this part, that came up to Melanie. I don't know if Sherry was out there then, but I feel like it was somebody else that was with us. But he was autistic. A guy on the production team had not told the team that he was autistic and came to us and told us that now he feels like he can let the rest of his team know that he's an autistic male and that he doesn't have to mask. So, my
I
point
love that.
is, it's one thing that leads to another thing, so it's a chain, of doing that, and that's what
Yes.
advocacy is.
And inclusivity. I love, we also had three people on the team that we hired intentionally with autism to work with us on the whole project. And I remember the first meeting, one of the men was introducing himself. And it was a quick introduction. We all did 30-second introduction, 10-second introductions. And he spoke for 10 minutes. And it was such a great, for me, which I don't have patience all the time. I'm working on it. But I was remember sitting there and I said, let me go on mute. Let me just focus. I think you were texting me, like just, we have this, let him talk. And that was a wonderful learning too. Cause he added so much value, with his comments. But even that, like giving people time to speak without interruption, that was key,
Well,
critical.
not only
So
that, Kelly, I don't know if you remember later on. So, because we had hired those three consultants on, remember the one that you're talking to actually got a full-time job with the other
Oh,
guy that was on there because of
that's
their
awesome.
collaboration on our project. So, it led to
Oh,
employment.
good.
Having
That's
them on our
awesome.
team as a consultant led to full-time employment. Because I don't know if you remember, he spent that 10 minutes talking about how he lost his other jobs and how he couldn't work or whatever. So the other guy that was on the call, I mean, the other autistic consultant hired him full time to work for his company. So
Which
that
is
led
so
to
good.
full time
It's a
employment
great
for him.
project. Yes. So if you want to know more about the campaign, you can go to EasterSealsAutism.com. It's so good. There's merchandise. We did like a Duolingo type of quiz. There's, the website, all kinds of amazing things. And then the spots are beautiful and the stories of the people are beautiful. So anyway, EasterSealsAutism.com. So I want to come back to you. So why is all of the advocacy work that you do, like you run Accessibility Bridge, another nonprofit, you are executive director of the Sunrise Project. Thank you. Why is advocacy so important to you? And how long have you been doing this specific work?
This specific
Two-part
one,
question.
yeah, right. Me turning into, so I was his mom, mom advocate. But then probably 2019 was when I decided to really turn it into a business because people were calling me. First you're disruptive and then you become a template. And that's what I noticed started happening because before people were like, oh my gosh, here comes Dee again. She's about to say something about something. And I'm like, yes, I am. But then that quickly shifted to let me call Dee to help me with this thing. And I was in a space of, if you're going to call me, I'm going to do it the way that I need to do it in order to get what it is that you need. And then that became the standard. And then now that's norm. I mean, and that 100% now has been basically my brand of, being able to articulate things in a way that that people need to hear it in order to get things done. Because advocacy in this space isn't well, in any space, but particularly this is about someone's life. If I fail, he fails. If our children, it falls on us at the end of the day. So 2019, let's see, I left Georgetown in 2016, and then I went to Catholic Charities for 2 years, and then I ended up having, I left there to work with my son full time because he was in high school, and I was getting called like every day. For something, but it wasn't major. And I think that's when like my brain was like, this is too much for them, not for me. It was too much for them. And I decided to
Interesting.
homeschool him at that point. Because he wanted to go to college, but college wasn't a reality in their minds for him. Like at that point, they wanted to take him off of his the high school diploma and put him on a special education diploma, which is the opposite direction of going to college. So then when he graduated in 2020, but in 2019, the more people that started contacting me, I said, I really need to start a nonprofit. Because I had so much, like by the time he left high school, his IEP binder, the pages, I know it had to been like 80 to 100 pages for the number of meetings that we were having and the prior notices and everything that I was putting in there. And I had binders and binders of information. And so I said, I really need an organized way of communicating with other people. And then so over the years, it's just really grown because I've had to go to the state for things, with the driver's license and getting, policy changes. I mean, so as you know, I stop at nothing when it comes to advocating for him. If I can't get it from you, then I'm just going to keep going. And, but I think I'm kind of reversed now. I'm going straight to the top now and working my way down.
Yes, going straight to the governor. I want to, before I open it up for questions, because I know there might be some people here that have questions for you or who may be dealing with different, similar situations. You had a major hand in changing Maryland law around, I believe it was around plain language and also the learning materials, like to get your driver's license. So, can you share a little bit about that? And then I want to open it up for questions.
Of course. So my son, like I said, he's a middle child, and his rites of passage are the same as everyone else. And his sister got her driver's license. She learned to drive, went to college, and he wants all the things. And then his younger brother, who he's 4 years older than his, our youngest son, he got his driver's license and all the things. And so every week for almost a year, we drove to an MVA about 45 minutes away from our home for him to take the test to get his permit. He failed every single week. And it's not because he couldn't do it, because I would never set him up that way. Like if I didn't think it was achievable, we would do it. But there's an online, first of all, he'd already taken driver's ed. I found a driver's ed company that would work with someone that has autism, and he was able to do that online, take the class online with a virtual instructor, and they would walk him through the test, like read the questions. So just know that that's also an option. So he'd already passed driver's ed, but he couldn't do the driving part without getting his permit. So that's why, that's why we went there. So there's a practice test that you take online before you go in and take your permit. He would get 25 out of 25, and he could do it in, 10 minutes or less. So no problem at all. But when we went to the MVA to take the test, he was getting like three right. And it doesn't make sense. Like he knew that book like the back of his hand, and he was still failing. And something just didn't sit right with me. And we had them read him the test. I was like, maybe he was nervous, maybe he didn't understand the question, maybe whatever. But then there was a point when I was like, this is not him. This isn't about him. So fast forwarding, Fast forward, I learned that the test that they gave at the MVA is not the same test, the practice test that they do online. And at
Interesting.
that point, I said, you know what? That's not fair. You know, that's like giving a child a textbook from 20 years ago, but then giving them a test that's relevant, you know, to
To
today.
the current book.
Right. So you can't prepare for something if you don't give people the right materials. Like that, it's unethical to do that. And I spoke with the person that actually wrote the test, and they said, well, the test is designed to get use their critical thinking skills to think about the material. And I told them that that is not your job to excuse me, to assess someone's critical thinking. Your job is to ensure that you have safe drivers. And being a critical thinker isn't a prerequisite to getting a driver's license or permit. And so I work with the Maryland Department of Education. I explained all the things and mentioned to them that this needs to be written in plain language, simply
That's right.
because, well, not specifically people, but people with autism, they're very concrete and they're very literal.
Very black and white.
Exactly. And so giving someone a test that talks about what something isn't is not fair. So some of the questions would be like, like if I said, 2 + 2 is 4, but the question would say 2 + 2 is not, and then it would say 4, 5, 6, or whatever. And so, like, you don't ask people what something is not, because the book tells you what the alcohol level is. It talks about what this sign is, not what it is not. And so, it's discriminatory. It against people that don't have the capacity to do that. And so then the state did agree to rewrite the entire manual in plain language,
Yes,
but in
explain plain language because when we first talked about this a couple years ago, I didn't know that plain language was actually a language and I didn't understand what it is. So, can you explain that real quick?
So if you think about it in terms of math, it's the lowest common denominator of a language. So just to give an example of one of the words that was on the test that I had a problem with was agile. On the MVA test, it question you know one of the questions or the terms was oh no, I think it actually was an answer that said alcohol impairs someone's agility. Like, we don't use the word agility or agile in everyday language. We use words like flexibility or the ability to react or time to react. So plain language is the lowest common denominator of language that you can use. So and if you look
You
it up online,
shared things like pink eye
I was
would be
just about
plain
to say
language.
that.
Yes. Go ahead.
So in like a medical term, you would say conjunctivitis. Like when you're talking about what's going on with someone's, eye. In plain language, that term would be pink eye. That's something that you visually you can see that the eye is pink. And so, but it means the same thing. So when you're communicating and even we did that on the Easter Seals campaign and the way that we communicate, that because and then also for people that use screen readers. That use AAC devices and those things. Like, it's just really inclusive language that that when you're talking about translating to other languages and all the things, it's just much easier to do. So they rewrote that manual in plain language, and it was also written in at least 20 other languages. And within a month, the pass rate for the state of Maryland went up 15%, not just for people with disabilities, but just across the state, because over 60% of the people in the state of Maryland weren't passing the test on the first try. That
I
was their
love that.
data, not mine. And so once that happened, that rate increased, quarter over quarter. And then they extended it to people getting CDL licenses. Because also, if you think about it, you have to look at your population of people in terms of their educational status and all of those things. So now they rewrote the manual for those getting their CDL license pass rate. Because when we talk about employment or getting people more jobs, people know how to drive, like you physically can do it. But when the test itself is a barrier, that's also a barrier to employment. So they
Right.
did that, which was amazing. And then Governor
Yeah.
Moore did wrote an executive order that all government documents moving forward in the state of Maryland were going to be written in plain language. So
How
that's an
awesome.
initiative that he has, and I think they have until 2027 to do it, but that's digital, the
Everywhere.
documents online.
Awesome.
And the reason why
Yes.
that's important is for like disaster relief. Like when you can't get somebody on the phone, when you go onto the government website for closings, like people don't know where to go. And you know, being in media and marketing, Kelly, like if you have to do more than three clicks on a website to do something, people will click off. But if they've lost power, if they need, I mean, if it, when it's critical, it has to be in a way that people can understand so they can be as independent as possible, which, you know, affects
Yeah.
the population here in the Sunrise Project. When you're in
That's
crisis
right.
and we want our children to help themselves, and we say go to the sunriseproject.com, like we have to have language, you know, that says, if you need help, click here, as opposed
Right.
to, you know, if you're suffering a crisis and, you know, whatever. So,
I love the plain language idea, and every state needs it. And that's a whole nother conversation because we
yep.
tried with a client and then it didn't end up working out, and that's okay. It's going to one day. But I
Yep.
want to make sure that we give time for people who may have a question or, and yes, agree. She's a mom that rocks. So proud of you. Tosh said that.
Oh,
Carmen
thank you,
says,
Tosh.
amazing. There is a question that says, my son was diagnosed with level one autism at age 26. The diagnosis was a relief for him. He could finally put a name on what he was experiencing. It has, however, been a journey and struggle for our family to understand and to find new ways to support him. Thank you for sharing your journey in this area and for your continued dedication to our collective healing. Yay, she has
Thank
hearts
you,
and
Bree.
prayer hands. And I love to explain the sunflower program. Can you explain that? Because I see she has it in here. Isn't there a, you know, and people have the sunflower on their, like a necklace. Can you explain
Yeah,
that?
absolutely. It's so funny you should mention that. Yesterday, that was the event that I was at yesterday. It's the Hidden Disability Sunflower. And someone that I serve on the board with at the Chamber of Commerce, she's the manager for the shops over where we live. And so she said, when she heard about the initiative, she asked if we could collaborate and do a festival, a sunflower festival, which was yesterday. So the sunflower is the official symbol for invisible disabilities. And
Yes.
there's a lanyard that you can wear when you're traveling.
Yes.
And I mean, I want to say almost all the airports have like 300 airports across the globe actually have people trained in
Yes.
this. So if you're wearing the lanyard, it lets people know that someone in your party that, you know, that you're traveling with has some sort of invisible disability and they may need additional support. And additional support would be a wheelchair. Like some people don't know, but
Yeah.
if you have rheumatoid arthritis, you know, or some type of physical pain, you can, you know, you can get wheelchair service at the airport. You can pre-board.
The pre-board is
Exactly.
important.
Like you don't have to disclose your, you know, your pain or your whatever to do this because there's still laws that prevent you from doing that. But that specific lanyard, like if you don't want the hassle of someone just stopping you, going through TSA pre-check, and
Yes.
you're going through the handicap lane, if you have the lanyard on, they're trained to not say anything.
They
You're going
know
through
that.
that. They know it. And so it's just a very subtle way of letting people know that you know, that you may need more patience, or even like if you have a child that has meltdowns or an adult that has meltdowns, if they see that sunflower, they will give you space. Like if they're an adult having a meltdown and people are staring, the workers in that space would be like, everybody keep moving instead of rushing over to the person for causing a disturbance. They're going to keep the bystanders moving because they understand that there could be a mental crisis, you know, whatever it is. So we get that level of that support, and they're free. The lanyard.
Yes, and it's on your website for a disability accessibility bridge. I just put the link. I don't know if it was the right link, but I put the link
Well, I
to your
see a
website that
Yahoo
talks about
something.
it. And all right, and then also sunflower. partners.org, but you have the information on your website, accessibilitybridge.com, correct? Okay, cool. So I want to open it up to questions because we have had a great conversation. And if anybody out there wants to ask Dee a question, or if you have a child with autism, thank you, Dee, for putting the right link in the chat. Please feel free to come off of mute. If you're on your phone, you can hit star six, or you can come on camera, or you can type it in the chat, whatever is easiest. If you have a question or a comment for Dr. D, feel free. We have about 15 minutes left, 10 minutes or so.
So this is Taj. Good morning,
Good
everybody.
morning. Good morning.
And I just want to speak to the friend of a friend that has a child on the spectrum, because I don't think we have that discussion enough. Just because I don't experience it doesn't mean that I don't want to understand how to support not only her, but her child, and to be better educate others, whether she had an organization or not. So I just think we as friends or support system, or just, if you're going to be in spaces and share spaces with others that are facing challenges with their child that has differences, that we need to lean in a little bit more to make sure that we are supporting in the most effective way, but we have to ask what that looks like, not assume what it is, if that makes sense. So that's what I try to do for my friend.
And you do.
Yeah,
Thank you.
that's
and
awesome. I
that's
love it.
important,
Yes.
because the caregiver, like, we need support too. I mean, we absolutely, because it's not necessarily about doing things for the child, but support looks like, so for almost 10 years, I worked at Georgetown University, and my boss, and I had a couple of VPs that, came in while I was in that role, but I would not get to work before 10. Like, I would work from 10 to 3, like 4 days a week. And then there was a day a week, like Thursdays, I think I worked until 8 or 9. So my schedule was flexible because I wanted to get my son on the bus, and then I wanted to be there to get him off the bus. If I had to step away to take a phone call, that wasn't a problem. Like, I will say the entire time that I was there was not a problem. So there was that flexibility. And even, even now, like, sometimes I may not make a meeting. Like, even my friends know, 9 times out of 10, I'm going to be late. Even when I'm early with something, I'm going to be late because inevitably my phone is going to ring. It's either going to be him. So I make sure I take his calls every time he calls me, simply because even if there's not a problem, the fact that he's reaching out to me is him using his resources. So I'm mom, but I'm also on his support team. And so if he's
That's
calling
right.
me, if he's thought enough to call me to ask me something simple, like he's got a cold right now, and so he's sending me photos and he's like, "Can I take this? Can I take this?" Of course. So at some point,
Yes.
he's not going to text me and say, "Can I take this with this cold?" He's going to know that that's what you use to do it. And even, like, when we've been in meetings, Kelly, I'll have to go off camera, or on mute, because I have to have, that's what support looks like. So it, it's not physically driving me anywhere, but I need grace. I mean, like, Taj will joke about it. She's like, "D's gonna be late." I am, like, I'm not ashamed, I'm not, painting my nails at the last minute. I'm having to take a quick call that may not be so quick. Or texting him, while I'm getting dressed. So, I own the situation that I'm in, and I'm making the best of it. Yeah.
And you're fully present. That's what's so important, I think, for the kid, our children, whether they're adults or younger. It's important to be really present for them. That's what that's and I view you as that's your priority. You have all these other things going on. But if Florence calls or any of your children call, you take the call and you deal with that and then you come back. I think
Right.
that's awesome.
So
Is
something
there
I want to
any?
mention
Go
while
ahead.
we're here. I think I saw Tracy come on. Is she here?
Yes, she is. And she's commenting. She said, "You are such an
I don't see
advocate."
her on
Where
my
is it?
screen for some
She
reason.
said, "D, you
She
truly
dropped
speak
off.
volumes."
Yeah, she dropped off a few minutes ago.
Oh, man. I wanted to say something. So he is in he's in school where Tracy lives, and there was a point when I mean, he was really, really struggling with some social things at school. And I knew that Tracy lived there. So I contacted her and said, "Do you know anybody? I am looking for a black male therapist that could really, really help Lauren." And she was like, "Well, there's this one guy. He doesn't, he doesn't really have a lot of space for clients, but I'll reach out and see if he'll take Lawrence or whatever." We connected. He has been absolutely amazing. This guy has been
Oh,
amazing
that's
to the point
awesome.
where he goes to my son's apartment. He has attended his meetings on, like, so when his support team at school wants to have a conversation with him, he'll say, "I'm going to go there in person with him." Like, they need to see
That's
that he has
great.
a black male presence here because the conversation will be different. Now, he charges me, but it's worth every penny
Yes, it's
because
worth it. Yeah.
it definitely releases any anxiety I may have about him going into a situation on his own. This guy has taken him to swim practice, so if my son doesn't feel like he wants to talk, he offers to take him to swim practice and they
That's
chat on the way to
awesome.
practice. So this Sunrise community has really, it's helped me too. So, I work here, but I benefit more as a community member than I do as an employee.
Absolutely. I completely agree. I feel the same way. There's a question that says, is there a sunflower equivalent for a driver's license or car tags to let people know this is a person with hidden disability they should be when they get pulled over, if they get pulled over? I'm smiling because the project that we worked on for a year. But I'm not going to talk about that. But
I know, Kelly. I
there are
know.
some
There's
programs, and there's, I
opportunity.
think, Pathfinders for Autism, right? You want to share
Yeah,
about
so I
that?
was going to say it depends on where you live, first of all. Like, so in the state of Maryland, there's something called the Blue Card, and we actually distribute those, my organization, at our events. You can pick them up at the MBA, and it's just the blue card that says, "I have a developmental disability." And then on the back of it, you can write your child or yourself, their name on it. And like Kelly mentioned, Pathfinders for Autism, they have a whole envelope with things on it, things that they can put on their sun visor, with all that information. But many states do have those things. They're called blue envelopes. So check your MBA to see if they have that. And then the state of Maryland now has where you can put a butterfly symbol on your driver's license or ID. But yes, they're
Right,
in
which is
the
great.
officers see it. They're
They know.
supposed to be trained on what to do. I
Right.
see that
Even
Lynn
just
has a
getting
question. I'm sorry.
an envelope, and putting it on your visor with the words could be helpful. And the question, yes, please feel free. Hello, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. So I have a question with regards to the police. When there is a person with a hidden disability, what would you say when someone is having a meltdown? What is the protocol for that? And how does the Sunflower Initiative play into that? Is it
So the Sunflower Initiative doesn't necessarily play
Does it
into
have
police
anything to do with that?
activity. Yeah, that doesn't necessarily have anything to do with police activity. So there are businesses, so obviously travel. So usually train stations, airports globally, and other transit, because you'll actually, once you recognize it, you'll see them everywhere in the advertising. And then there are businesses, there are hotels like Hilton, Legoland, Disney. There are many, many places that are becoming like autism certified. And we talked about this in our campaign, Kelly. So there are many businesses that do it. But in terms of law enforcement, their training is very different when dealing with someone with what they're saying, mental illness. But something that Kelly and I have been trying to work on for some time now is to get autism specific training for law enforcement, so that they don't confuse mental illness with someone that has autism, which and those interactions can be managed. So the blue card, which is what I mentioned, the blue envelope, if you're in a position, so the envelope would be if you're in a car. If they see the blue envelope, they're supposed to be able to recognize that instantly. But I say supposed. And then if, but they're not always driving. They could just be a pedestrian walking somewhere. So the blue card is something that you can put in your wallet. And then the new symbol that they have, that's on the ID, because the officer should ask for your ID. And when they pull it, they would be able to see it. So I tell people you have to protect yourself, number one. And then number two, if you're not in a vehicle, before calling the police in a crisis situation, there are other numbers that you can call to have someone come before. Like either, but 988 is just for the individual person. But I have to remember what the number is. Almost like a social worker that comes at the same time. But we try, oh, I know what it is. It's your friend Kelly. They really teach people. Is it Silence the Shame?
Oh, Silence the Shame.
Yes.
Shanti, she lives out of Atlanta, but they, yes, go
They have
ahead.
a national organization, but there are numbers that we really encourage people to call before calling the police if you feel like
Yes.
your loved one or someone is in crisis, because we're trying to keep them out of, because they're not giving you a hard time, they're having a hard time. And if you can
Right.
mitigate that situation early enough and bring in a trained professional, it keeps them out of the court system for something they can't control. And that really is
Right.
my goal.
Just really helpful.
Yeah.
So there's two more questions and we're
Thank
almost out of time. So yeah, thank you. And thank you for the question. One says, how was your homeschooling schedule structured? How did you balance homeschooling, parenting, your other children, and your own self-care? I'm considering this option, but I'm concerned about socialization and being able to fully engage. My son is 12. He's a rising seventh grader. Additionally, I work remotely from home. And then there's another question that somebody texted me. So if you
So
could answer that
homeschooling
part.
is very, very flexible. I've registered with a homeschooling co-op, and I don't know if you know about those, but they meet certain days a week. And the one that I registered with operated almost like a school. Like each, they had a classes that were in line with what the state of Maryland had. So they had like classes that fulfilled the American history requirement or world history requirement, art, and they changed classes. So they met at a church that wasn't far from where we were. So going through the co-op, and there was somebody that even did the transcripts there. So there are hundreds of people in this homeschooling co-op, and the parents were the teachers, because so we all volunteered to do something within that co-op, and that worked. And so because my son was a swimmer, his swimming qualified as his physical education, his PE, his so there's just a lot of flexibility in it. And so that's how that worked. You don't have to do the one-on-one. So when we went, to the co-op classes during the week, that fulfilled everything that he needed to do academically. And then like the foreign
That's
language, I
awesome.
think I taught him that, but there are options, because I
That's
knew I
awesome.
couldn't do it.
And if people want to get information or have questions for you, do you have an email they could reach out to, or should they go to your website, Disability Bridge or Sunrise? You know, we have a Sunrise, of course. What's the best way for people to reach you if they want to follow up? Because I'm getting texts and questions, and I know we're out of time.
So, my Accessibility Bridge email is the letter D, SAPP at accessibilitybridge.com. And then my email address here at the Sunrise Project is DEE at thesunriseproject.com. I'm putting it in the
Awesome. And she's putting it in the chat. That's awesome. Thank you so much. And you know, I was looking back at every time you've been here 5 times,
Really?
always during Autism Awareness Month, and always with such incredible nuggets of wisdom. So I just want to encourage anybody that's on the call that has any questions, or maybe you have a child with autism or an adult with autism. Dee is an incredible wealth of knowledge and a wonderful, wonderful person who's willing to share her time. This is what her whole life is about, advocacy and support for people in the disability community. So Dee, as we wrap, do you want to share a few last words, any pieces of advice on that part about self-care? How do you manage your own self-care while dealing with all of this?
This year I've been really intentional about building, my tribe and just not either playing small or shorting myself on the things that I like. People will
Yes.
say that you're too much of one thing, not enough of the other. But I have friends that like the same things that I like. We eat at the same, they like eating where I like to eat. They like, they know what I'm gonna order. They know all the things. So that's part the biggest part of self-care for me. But what I want people to take away is like there is hope. There, whatever you want for yourself or your child, you can have it. I mean, it's not gonna, it's not going to be easy. I'm not saying that, but do it anyway. It's not gonna look like, and as you know, Kelly, like we pray about things. And when they show up, it doesn't show up like we want it to show up. Like, be careful what you pray for. But you can have it 100%.
You can have it all, and we're worthy of it all. And I think what you said about prayer and asking God for help, that it works all the time, every day. Well, thank you so much. I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Vicky, who will close us out this morning in a prayer. She gets ready to take her mom to church.
Good morning. Good morning, Kelly.
Good
Good morning, Dee.
morning. Hey,
Thank you
Dr. Vicki
both for being
Johnson.
so amazing and for this wonderful community. God, we thank you for this beautiful day that you've given to us, a day we've not seen before. We choose to rejoice and give you glory. Thank you for wisdom. Thank you for resources. Thank you for allowing gifts like Dee and Kelly to be in the earth and being gifts to this community. Thank you for every mom and father, every household represented. Thank you for our children that have brought us together in this space of community to show love to one another, to support one another, through which you help to meet our needs spiritually, relationally, emotionally, mentally. God, we give you glory for these things. Now, bless us the rest of this day, and then allow us to come back together again on next week for more wisdom, more love, and fellowship. Help us to be anxious for nothing, but in everything with thanksgiving, with prayer and supplication, and with thanksgiving, make our requests known to you. We give you glory for this opportunity once again to be in this space, and we honor you. In your name we pray. Amen. Have a blessed day, everyone.
Amen. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. See you next week. Have a great day and a great week, everybody. Thank you, Dr. D, and thank you, Dr. Vicky. Have a beautiful day.